Hi, I'm Sean Sutner, Senior News and Features Writer for Search Health IT. I'm here with Art Papir, MD, a practicing physician and CEO of Visual DX, a health information company focusing on point-of-care decision-making. We're going to talk about the role of technology in combating diagnostic errors and other health IT and medical imaging topics. Dr. Papir, you've been involved in diagnostic accuracy projects for a long time, and the ECRI Institute just listed diagnostic error as the top patient safety concern for 2018. So what kind of technologies can clinicians use in diagnostic imaging, whether in dermatology or other specialties, to significantly reduce widespread diagnostic error? I guess I'd ask you, how much certainty can physicians have about the accuracy and reliability of AI or machine learning clinical decision support tools or diagnostic tools? And what are there any FDA approval issues in all this stuff?
Care, they might see 20 different patients in a shift. And clinical decision-making as decisions are made. So we believe they can, but that's not a universal belief. There are many, many clinicians that just practice out of their brain, and they don't look things up in the computer, and they don't look things up even in a book. So the first question is, can we augment our brains? And I think it's pretty clear that in fields where there's complexity and a lot of knowledge, that you use tools. So we use the aviation analogy to say, yes, the Wright brothers would fly a plane without technology. They just put their finger in the air, see which way the wind's blowing, and push off. But you can't do that with a 747 or a 777. Likewise, 100 years ago, when we knew very little, we could practice from our brain. But now we have patients in intensive care units with incredible complexity on multiple medications, multiple problems, that we're still practicing often solely from our brain. So the question is, what are the systems that will augment our thinking as we work? And that's really the category of clinical decision support. And then you layer on the question of, will artificial intelligence improve clinical decision support to make it more accurate and more effective? And I believe it will. Is it ready and perfect today? No, it's not. Incredible progress. And the idea of augmenting the physician, so it's the physician plus the clinical decision support with or without machine learning / AI, that idea of the clinician plus the tool is more powerful than the clinician alone. That day is firmly here. I mean, the real comparison has to be between people just using what's in their brain versus augmenting the brain with the computer. Is that augmented brain more knowledgeable? And I would say it certainly is. You know, I think the FDA is going to have a hard time reviewing every app that's created in healthcare, and I think they're moving towards looking at the processes that companies use to make sure that it's sound scientifically, sound from a medical informatics point of view, and that these teams have the capability and knowledge to build these tools. So there's, you know, I think going to be quite a tsunami of new apps and new technologies coming along, not only in the next year or 2 years, but in the next decade. And it's going to be possible for reviewers to review every app. So they're going to really have to look at the developers and see if the developers are following good processes.
Why are diagnostic errors still so prevalent in healthcare today? And how specifically can clinical decision support software, you know, whether AI, machine learning assisted or not, how can they specifically help reduce diagnostic errors?
Well, diagnostic errors could be caused because there's poor communication, or, for example, there's a laboratory error. But they also can be caused because there's a cognitive mistake, a thinking mistake. The full list of diagnoses were not considered by the clinician. And actually, cognitive mistakes are the number one reason. And a lot of people think it's a lab error. But it's actually errors in judgment and errors in thinking that lead the way. And when you step back and you think about medicine, there's a saying that common things happen commonly. And when you hear hoofbeats, think horses, not zebras, which is what we teach our students and residents, so that they don't go on a fishing expedition for a 1 in 1 million diagnosis when the patient actually has a common diagnosis. But what's been left out of that discussion, I think, going back decades, is the idea that variation of the common causes much more harm than rare diseases. So as an example, a patient comes into a doctor's office that says they have crushing chest pain. The pain goes down their arm and into their jaw, and they're sweating and they feel fatigued. Most clinicians and even most people that watch television will know that that patient needs to be evaluated for a myocardial infarction, and that you need to rule out the possibility that they're having an MI or other serious cardiac events. patient that comes in with a toothache that's 70 years old as a smoker and comes in and is triaged to the non-acute side with a toothache, that could be the presentation of a myocardial infarction. So diseases don't always present like the classic or the textbook. And what we're seeing from our work in machine learning and just our end of looking at the way patients present with rashes. So, you know, you can have Lyme disease or serious infectious disease present, or metabolic or nutritional disease present with some kind of sign on the skin. And as we collected and reviewed, we've reviewed millions of images of diseases from leading institutions and doctors looking at pictures over close to 20 years, what we're struck by is the degree of variation in most diseases. We teach the students to look for the classic because we can't teach them all the variants. But in reality, we over-rely because we've been a memory-based system on classic prototypes. So the machine learning can catalog all this variation and start to create a real learning system with feedback loops where you can start to catalog variation and hopefully dial back the degree of diagnostic error.
Okay, so beyond diagnostics, how can software-based clinical decision support tools help our inpatient treatment?
Well, okay, so before you treat, you have to have the diagnosis right. And so the focus of our work is on really the three most important questions in medicine, which is, what is the diagnosis? Second question is, what tests do I order to be the safest, the most efficient, and cost-effective laboratory tests or radiographic tests, diagnostic imaging tests? And then what is the most appropriate treatment? Individuals come in to see doctors with symptoms. Doctors often call the largest system, the symptom, the chief complaint. And it's the clinician's job to evaluate the patient, to figure out the possibilities, order the right tests. And then once there's a basis for a diagnosis, the clinician then moves on to therapy, bringing into context the age, gender, ethnicity, and personal beliefs of the patient. So a physician's job is really not to make decisions, but to be a partner with the patient, explaining possibilities and helping to guide the patient based on their personal preferences and beliefs. So the role of decision support in this pathway of computers is to make sure that you're receiving from the patient their full history and their beliefs, and you're going to ask the right questions of the patient. In the past, we've done all that in our brains, and we've done it really based on fee-for-service medicine so that we're fast, but we're not necessarily thorough. So there's always been a trade-off in medicine between efficiency, or more accurately, speed in terms of the way medicine is practiced on one end of the spectrum, and then thoroughness and completeness on the far other end of the spectrum. So there's a principle called the Eddo principle that you can be either super efficient on one hand or you can be super thorough on the other, but you can't be super efficient and thorough at the same time. So the goal is to be in that sweet spot and be appropriately thorough and efficient. The computer can help us to be more thorough by actually having the patient complete some of the questionnaire and the history, maybe at home or on their smartphone. So we're going to see these very rapid advances in using information to engage the patient, educate the patient, involve the patient in the process from the start so the patient is responding to questions, whether it's through Siri or through Alexa, where you know, you're interacting with your phone and it's asking questions in context using gender, where you're located on the planet, and other information that might be in healthcare or other services through the phone. And it will then be able to be brought over to the clinician, whether it's through telemedicine or in-person visit or in the emergency department. The doctor will have plugged into the electronic record a diagnostic support tool, a testing support tool to order the right tests, and also a treatment support tool. So it's really a holistic system that we think about. We don't think about picking out the parts. We don't think about there's, on the one hand, there's a consumer health company like WebMD. On the other hand, there's a professional